actually the first customer we ever signed was in home healthcare. And this was an organization in Australia that over time, they're still a customer today and a wonderful one. But, you know, they grew from, I think, 75 nurses and care workers that was delivering different services, physio and podiatry for aged care individuals and facilities in a very mobile way. So moving from many, you know, one appointment to the other throughout the day for elderly individuals in the community. And when they became a customer, they had 75, and they've since grown and scaled to 500 care workers.
And now from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Today, I sit down with Matt Fairhurst, co-founder and CEO of Schedulo, and we discuss productivity and scaling the deskless workforce, a topic that's so relevant these days as we are in the middle of a pandemic. Schedulo is helping the world understand and manage their workforce, schedule and assign work faster and intelligently, and get work on mobile devices, something that we are doing more than ever for the past 6 months. I hope you enjoy our conversation. And if you like what you hear, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite app. Welcome, Matt. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. How are you doing during the shelter in place?
I'm good, Christine. It's great to be here and talking with you. I'm doing all right. I'm doing well. I spent a little bit of time initially when COVID-19 really was developing into a full-blown crisis back in Australia, just to be close to my own family, but currently back here in the United States in San Francisco. But, you know, some Zoom meeting and video conferencing fatigue and missing the office and missing some of the social proof of being around the rest of the company every day, but otherwise healthy and safe, which is important right now. So I'm doing all right.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. So maybe for our audience, it might be helpful to start with a little bit of your background. It sounded like you're from Australia, and how you end up being here, and also how do you end up starting Schedulo, and what's your vision when you start Schedulo? So it's like the whole nine yards.
Yeah, no, there's a lot in that question, but I think happy to take it sequentially. The sort of early chapters of my career were in marketing and web design, and I fell in love with graphic design and digital design through sort of early chapters of university, and then the first stage of my career. And I found myself working for a consulting company that was doing some general consulting, but specifically focused on Salesforce.com and CRM implementation, which was back then actually fairly new, at least in Australia. I think they were the second consulting company that was implementing Salesforce for companies. And that was the first time I think I'd been exposed to enterprise software and enterprise technology, and it was certainly a new world for me. I quickly sort of fell in love with the power of how design could influence the way that people use technology and use software, especially in the enterprise, where I think certainly back then, enterprise software maybe didn't have the best reputation for wonderful usability and wonderful user experience.
It still is not, though.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think for the most part, although I think one of the theses we have when we started the company was to incorporate and be very sort of design oriented in the way that we built our product and thought about our users. But I do think that's still true today to a certain extent. When I was working in that company, it was acquired by a larger system integration partner. And then ultimately that company was acquired by Accenture. But I wasn't terribly excited to go on that path and that journey. And I started working on some product and built a small product company with my co-founder, James. And that product was okay. It wasn't terribly exciting.
What was the product at that time?
It was a order to cash or quote to cash product. So kind of a mini or light ERP. And we integrated with Salesforce because I had some experience and built some relationships there. And that was both a wonderful proving ground and ignited the fire, I think, of entrepreneurship and building a company and building product and designing product in myself and my co-founder. And although the product we were never particularly excited by, and turns out neither were our early customers back then, it did give me the opportunity to talk to a lot of businesses of all shapes and sizes. And this was around 8 years ago or 8.5 years ago when, the iPhone and smartphones were really starting to become prevalent and democratized across the workforce. And it was always amazing to me that certainly in the latter part of that chapter of my career, just how many companies wanted to talk about how smartphones were changing the way that they were thinking about the future of their workforce and a mobile workforce's productivity. And that was really the spark that ignited ultimately what became Scheduler, this fascination with a consistent theme that we were seeing in the challenges of organizing, scheduling, and allocating work in the back office to a deskless or mobile workforce. I think how visual that problem was. People were using maps and very complex Excel spreadsheets or whiteboards. And, it is a highly visual problem where you're trying to bring together a whole bunch of data to make intelligent scheduling and workforce management decisions. And then I think what mobile apps meant and could mean to people that were traditionally running around with clipboards and pieces of paper or laptops, things like that in the field. And it was those principles and those challenges that got me excited to start Scheduler and pivot. And we found our first four customers without having a product, just off the back of a Photoshop design and a mock-up of what our product could be. And certainly the reaction to those ideas was another catalyst for us to say, yep, it's time to fold down what we were doing and start again. And so it was myself, James, and one engineer back in a garage building the company from scratch. So that was some of the founding story. Yeah, that was in Brisbane in Australia, where we still have a big part of our team. We still build most of our product there in Australia, and although we're headquartered here in San Francisco now, still have deep connection to Australia.
Walk us through the process from the company, the product that nobody was excited about, and then how you end up figuring out this is it, and then run with it.
Yeah, I think as I mentioned the. This repeated theme of like kind of not wanting to talk about the product that we built, but really wanting to talk about these other problems that were surfacing in organizations at the time, led me to think, okay, if I entertain some of these conversations and go away and think about it and come back with a possible product or a possible answer to these problems, let's measure that reaction and see, if this is just a thought bubble or actually something that could yield and turn into a business or a better idea than the one that we'd started with. And I think, that is representative of many kind of startup journeys, is how do you validate ideas as quickly as you can? And then what are the signals and interactions that you're looking for to then go and place a bigger bet bigger and bigger bets as you move through? And for me, it was certainly trying to quickly understand and appreciate the consistent set of challenges that these companies were talking about as it related to scheduling and mobility, and then that validation that we saw in that first turn of our product.
You definitely do a lot of listening without realizing.
I think it's so important, especially when you're building software and technology for use cases and problems that you don't yourself have. And this is a theme we've tried to carry on for the lifetime of Scheduler, which is now 6.5 years, is recognizing that we ourselves are not inherently deskless in the way that we work. We don't move around every day to get work done. We're not we're sitting behind desks and working from home or working in an office. And so it's really critical that we listen and learn as much as we can from the companies that not only using our technology, but would like to use our technology. And I think you have to be a good listener, especially in the early days of trying to figure out exactly what challenges you're going to solve.
So maybe this is a good time for you to explain to us what does Scheduler do and what problem that you guys solve?
Yeah. Earlier this year, we launched our sort of branding for our company and what we've built. And we called it the Deskless Productivity Cloud. And this has really been a graduating level of maturity in our thinking of ultimately the problem that we solve and the product that we've built, which is an enterprise platform for mid-size and large, really large organizations to manage and engage with a deskless workforce. So people that are sitting and working away from an office and away from behind a desk, they're moving around to get work done and ultimately be productive. A mobile application that can be in the palm of those deskless workers, connecting them with their peers and the organization that they work for. And ultimately, together, that forms this enterprise platform for the management of work, the organization of people, the scheduling of work, and mobile engagement around that work. And it's used in almost every industry and many different sort of sectors of the economy. Some very strong themes. Healthcare is the strongest and most dominant that we work with. But we've deliberately tried to stay horizontal and look at the universal and consistent challenges of deskless work, workers and workforces, and apply them to different industries so that together they can see the benefits of different and emerging business models over time, which has been really interesting. But the Deskless Productivity Cloud is what we've built and ultimately what serves our customers today.
So obviously, we have you here to talk about not just about the deskless because of that certain aspect of it that impact the healthcare, because we're all about healthcare here. Can you give us an example of a case study, like, the deskless work environment for healthcare and how your technology helped to deliver that care?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I was reflecting on this before this discussion and remembered that actually the first customer we ever signed was in in-home healthcare. And this was an organization in Australia that over time, they're still a customer today and a wonderful one, but they grew from, I think, 75 nurses and care workers that was delivering different services, physio and podiatry for aged care individuals and facilities in a very mobile way. So moving from many, one appointment to the other throughout the day for elderly individuals in the community. And when they became a customer, they had 75, and they've since grown and scaled to 500 care workers. And that use case is fairly representative of a lot of the healthcare organizations we work with. Here in the United States, with home care and home health organizations at scale, with thousands of people out in the field, and sometimes tens of thousands of people, organizing and helping organizations and companies and providers ultimately align the appointments and those moments of care that are delivered as part of a care plan or an initial assessment or whatever the need might be with the right care worker and nurse based on many different variables and constraints. It could be skills and capability, obviously location and proximity to an individual, but other things like the continuity of care and making sure that you have you're building and developing relationships between a care worker and a patient in the home, which is incredibly important for certain sectors of home and healthcare.
How is that, currently? I mean, how was it done before your technology were implemented? Obviously, the home care has been around for a while.
Yeah, when we started the company, and one of the other real inflection points for us that got us excited was recognizing that outside a few very specific areas of time and attendance, say retail and hospitality, that had some technology available to it, and heavy industry field service like oil and gas, telecommunications, and things. There really wasn't any other technology accessible to organizations that had a deskless workforce and for a deskless employee to use. And in healthcare, that was definitely true. In the past, certainly when we started as a company, Excel, Google Calendar, Outlook, whiteboards, paper, you name it, I think we've probably seen every example of very antiquated processes of trying to organize people and schedule appointments and enable and optimize work. I think in some examples, particularly where you have an EMR and EHR at play, there's some light capabilities these days. I think with the advent of smartphones and smart devices, some industry solutions have added some of these capabilities in, at least to a light degree. But for the most part, even today, when we're working with new customers in health, they're moving from Excel and spreadsheets to now a platform for really handling these problems at scale. So it's I think, an amazing inflection and digital transformation for many of the companies we work with.
So how do you see, I mean, now with the pandemic, you know, the home care, you know, which I think still need to happen, how is that change, and how does your technology help not just the home care, but can it be translated to beyond other areas within healthcare?
Yeah, I'd say there's a few different examples of change that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 months. I think there are companies that weren't using technology like ours before, and one of the blockers may have been in the past just the lift and the implementation required to really fundamentally change their business process and their business model. And some of them are using this as an opportunity to engage with us and other companies like us to change business process and implement technology for the future. The pause that they've had to introduce and the slowdown or the inability to go into people's homes or go into a facility and deliver care means that the operations and day-to-day business continuity of their organization is no longer a blocker to them implementing change. So they're using this as a moment to accelerate digital transformation and change within their organization. I think there's other examples of organizations and health providers where they are delivering mission-critical services, and therefore they can't stop the delivery of that care, but that the mode and the medium of care has had to change. And so in the past, where they've perhaps delivered care in the home, that level of care, or at least partial level of care, can be delivered digitally. So they've moved very quickly and pivoted to telemedicine and digital mediums of care delivery. And that's another example that we've seen. And I think for other providers that are even probably more extreme than that, where actually services in the home can't stop. They're genuinely critical to the livelihood and the lives of the patients they work with. They've had to pivot very quickly and think about the safety of their workforces, the technology they need to better communicate and engage with those workforces in real time in response to this crisis. So there's been several different models, and I think several different inflections of change that's happened in the last 3 or 4 months across the healthcare companies we work with. And, I would say those three are the dominant patterns that we've seen.
I mean, I can see, you know, every time when you have so many Excel spreadsheet and whiteboard, and it's always good to kind of organize it digitally. I see the advantage of it. How's your technology provide advantage for because you said earlier about the home care still need to be delivered, but then there's also concern about the pandemic. How is your technology can help reduce the chance of infection?
Yeah, as a company, we pivoted fairly quickly and moved fairly quickly. And these are moments that I think are wonderful, despite the I think the horrors and many of the terrible outcomes of a crisis like this. I think it does facilitate rapid innovation for companies that really lean in. And, you know, I think Schedulo and our team has been able to respond very quickly and think about the areas of touch point that we can drive safer practices in. And I think the absolute need for the companies that we work with to leverage new ways of communicating very quickly with their frontline workers. I'd say two examples of that have been a feature that we released within weeks of the pandemic hitting for contactless signature and contactless digital engagement, where rather than when you're in the home, handing someone a tablet or a phone in order to complete a survey or sign off on the service delivery that you provided, sending them a link to their own device so that they can do that in a contactless way and minimize the interactions as much as possible, which is difficult to do in an inherently high-contact industry and a high-contact problem. But I think that's one area that we were able to drive assistance. The other area was opening up for free for a period of time a lot of our communication platform that allowed not just communication internally and across the workforce to help them stay aware and engage and prompted to the safety measures that they had to go through now and in response to this. And I think we can all remember in the early stages of this crisis, things were moving so quickly and the change was happening at a very rapid pace. And it was very difficult to get a cohesive and consistent message from local, state, and federal governments, and an ability to communicate very quickly within a business was really important. But beyond that, an ability to communicate to patients and clients that that they were serving, and to inform them very quickly by sending them SMS notifications and email and reminders about the services that they could deliver, how those services were changing, and what to expect. Through this crisis as they continue to deliver services either in the home or move to, you know, other mediums and telemedicine, for example. So I think they were probably two examples where we were able to respond very quickly with product in very deliberate initiatives, which is a lot of fun, I think, when you're in a startup and you're entrepreneurial, to be able to innovate quickly in moments of pressure. I think it's certainly enjoyable and rewarding when it works.
Yeah, no, it's always, especially when you see the impact for the people for receiving the services. Can you give us an example? I mean, we talk about the home care, like what type of home care that you've been serving, having your technology serve?
Yeah, there's several different sectors of health and home services that we have predominantly helped to serve. I'd say the three biggest ones are, post-acute home care here in the United States. And that in and of itself, home health and home care is a very broad category. Behavioral health and in-home pediatrics, for example, working with children, is also fairly dominant across our customer base. And disability services, either working with vision impaired or physically physical disability, mental disability individuals in the community, they're probably the three sectors that we've been most dominant in and represent most of our home health use cases and customers. The motions of work and sort of appointment-based scheduled interactions with these individuals fundamentally don't differ that much between each of those models. But, the business process and organizational design and specific challenges that those sort of subsectors face are somewhat nuanced and different across them. But I'd say they're the three sort of most dominant parts of the health industry that we're working with.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group, Canon Quality Group has been helping medtech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
Can you tell us about, like, so the business model for, say, what, not on your end, but it's also from your customer? Why? I mean, I assume they pay you a services. Like, what is it, their incentive? Why they think this is important for them?
Yeah, it depends. And this varies a little bit from country to country that we work with. Health and human services in general, you know, the governance and compliance and sort of local differentiation from the US compared to Australia, compared to the United Kingdom, for example, are all quite different. But I think one thing that is definitely true is several key pain points are consistent across all geographies that we work with in this sector. I'd say the first one is that the operating margins are really thin, typically. You know, the reimbursement, whether it's coming from a private payer or from a government single payer structure, ultimately translating into the remuneration and pay and benefits for a care worker, you know, need to be well understood and well optimized in order for organizations to be profitable. And I'd say the economic impact that we're able to deliver is far greater transparency and optimization of business processes so that, you know, cost and profitability becomes something that they can measure in real time. You know, so the operating efficiency of people as they move around and go from appointment to appointment, and the optimization of making sure that the right care worker is going to the right appointment at the right time, that you can account for things like exceptions that happen, missed appointments or leave and unavailability of people, reducing patient no-shows, you know, through active engagement and reminders are really clear and demonstrable ways that we can deliver a return on investment from, you know, our technology and really focus on the economic impact of these organizations as we work with them.
So, like in the US, so does your technology help increase the chance, efficiency of getting reimbursed for the services that they provide?
As it relates to reimbursement, I'd say the biggest impact is the acceleration of data visibility and reducing the cycle between operating in the field and then ultimately being reimbursed is really important. The, you know, the revenue lifecycle management between delivering the service and then ultimately receiving money has taken way too long in many use cases in the past. And the more that you digitize and transform operating practices, the faster those cycles can become and the more predictable they can become over time. And so there is pretty significant economic yield that we can you know, add value in. I'd say the other big theme that we see internationally is the skill shortage that exists and the sheer shortage of skilled nurses and care workers, and how important it is for organizations to focus on the retention of staff. And part of that is, I think, equipping them with wonderful technology and highly usable technology that actually makes it easier to do their job. So many times we hear stories, I think, of care workers and nurses that you know, attend appointments in the home for 8, 9, 10 hours a day and then have to come home and spend another 1 to 2 hours filling out paperwork or updating records. And in our opinion, you know, that there is really no reason for that additional overhead and workload that is placed on top of, you know, such an important part of our economy and society and such an important part of the workforce. And I think making their lives better and far easier so that they can focus on actually their real job, which isn't engaging with technology, it's delivering, you know, these services in the field. And, you know, I think from a retention and an employment and employee engagement perspective, that's been probably the other consistent theme, regardless of geography and country that we're working with.
So does your product, I mean, you do a lot of the home care stuff, and I know with the post-acute surgery, do you work with a lot of the medical center?
Yeah, the one thing that we haven't done a lot of is sort of the time and attendance problem within a facility itself. We've focused a lot of our time on organizations and health providers that have people that are intrinsically deskless and mobile. So they're moving around and helping them really solve those very hard logistics challenges, with a very mobile workforce. That said, I think as our product has matured and we've focused on time and attendance and other challenges that typically exist in facilities, appointments at scale, then we have had the opportunity to start working and improving some more clinical or facility-based scheduling type problems. In fact, I think COVID-19 has introduced interesting opportunities for us to do that relative to testing and immunization challenges at scale. But historically, we've focused mainly on very mobile and very transactional appointment-based use cases in the past.
Can you tell me more about the testing, the immunization?
Yeah, one of the things I think that happened when COVID-19 really hit, and I think it's so important as a company and as a startup that you not only define, but then can always fall back on your core values as a group of people and as a company. And for us, one of our core values is always thinking about our broader environment and the communities within which we're touching. How can we care for those communities and those stakeholders that need us as technologists and as a company? And one of the opportunities that we had was try and find companies that we were working with or had engaged with or were talking to that were really at the front line of dealing with COVID-19. So even beyond home health and these really mission critical services for home care, thinking about the very reactive problems relative to testing, for example. And we started working with some of our phlebotomy customers and prospects that were focused on either swab testing or serology testing challenges. And one of the big problems that these companies faced early on is they started working with local governments, state governments and organizations, health institutions to test people for COVID-19, was this challenge of how do you organize a lot of people to arrive at the same location safely and in an environment where things need to be done very delicately, and the throughput and capacity of these locations is really important to understand. And drive-through testing sites and drive-through locations were being stood up, but immediately sort of face planning to a certain extent because everyone would arrive at the same time to get tested and there were traffic jams and very unsafe sort of practices. And so we offered to help donate some of our time and some of our product to the problem of how do we schedule and organize these public health challenges that are emerging with COVID-19. So we built an app on our platform as an extension to our platform and a lot of the core capabilities that we've built over the last 6 years. And we did that within 3 weeks and were able to help some pretty meaningful public health challenges for the entire city of New York, for every employee of the MTA, every prisoner in the penitentiary system in New York. And beyond that now to how do you do that at scale in facilities like Madison Square Garden and stadiums rather than small drive-through locations or sports bubble leagues and entertainment leagues, leagues like the Major League Soccer are using it and managing the scheduling of people to arrive at a location to be tested. This is a seemingly fairly straightforward problem, but when you do it at scale, it's incredibly challenging. And we were very pleased to help and continue to be excited about some of the work that we're doing there. And I think is a testament to the power of our platform and the power of our ability to kind of lean on our values and help when people need it most.
So you think going you know, the next few months or maybe year or so, when there is a major sports event, do you envision that everybody need to be tested, get the result before they are allowed to enter and watch the game? Is that what you're saying? And then you just need to, your technology can help bring people in at the right time so that they don't have to be jammed.
I think there are several challenges as we think about reopening the economy and reopening activities that we all probably took for granted a little bit before this. And I think part of those challenges is the management of people and the throughput through any location at scale. And there's, you know, I think entertainment and sporting activities are one example of that. I think testing is certainly a very clear example of that. And that will, I think, move into immunization as a vaccine is developed and work is done, you know, on that front. I think managing people arriving at clinics and facilities to be immunized will be kind of the next chapter of that problem. I think there are lots of other examples. I think the general election and the federal election in November will be very challenging. Logistically to figure out, you know, for those states that aren't allowing postal voting or absentee voting, how do you help facilitate the throughput of people and the members, you know, members of the public in a way that is safe and manageable and responsible? And I think all of these are examples just of this fundamental problem of organizing people and their proximity to one another at scale right now. And I think that will go on for some time as the economy and social behaviors start to reopen and emerge.
So are you somehow do a proposal for the upcoming election? There must be a lot of suspicious, like how are you going to do, like who's going to allow you going to, I don't know, there's a lot of suspicion right now.
Yep. No, we thought about it. And I think that's an example of a challenge where it will be a monumental challenge for sure. You know, whether there's anything that we can do to help, I'm not sure on that particular example. I think that's fraught with several landmines of both political and operational challenge. But I think, you know, with or without technology, that's going to be a difficult problem to solve, but clearly an important one to think about.
But I think helping with a lot of the big event, helping people to kind of go back to the old normal with some technology, I think people would welcome that probably.
Yeah, I think so. And there's all sorts of creative ways that institutions and organizations are thinking about that problem. You know, if you think about some of the bubble leagues that are being discussed relative to sports and things like that, you know, how do you get all the players, all the coaches, all the family members and you know, supporting a cast of a league, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of people tested frequently and, maintained in a way that can accommodate and actually facilitate some kind of return to normalcy, although I don't think it will look the same for a little while. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are really complex challenges logistically that I think haven't had to be thought about before and have certainly not been thought about at the scale to which they are being now.
So what do you think about your technology in bringing students back to school?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think that for larger scale institutions, things like universities and other sort of large scale education facilities, this will be a very interesting challenge. You know, schools and smaller educational institutions, I think.
Like public high school.
Yeah.
K-8.
Yep, really, really tough and really challenging. I don't know how that's going to work or how our technology could apply to those use cases. I think, you know, testing and proximity and sort of throughput management is one aspect of that. You know, I think digital learning and digital education is also another aspect of that we've already experienced a little bit of and, you know, very complex tough problems, I think, that we're all having to think about very quickly, because some of these, although it's good to have school holidays with the introduction of the new school year, I think this is going to be a huge challenge.
I was hoping that you'd say that with our technology, then we can schedule the students when they come, that everybody will be back to school, and somehow your technology can tell the students which students should arrive at what time, and then allow more on-site learning.
Well, we haven't done a lot with education facilities yet on this problem, but would be more than happy to do so. So certainly, even if UCSF is open to talking about it, then love to. It is going to be a significant problem. So if there's an application for us there, then more than happy to explore that for sure.
So, well, thank you. It's been great. It's I found like your technology, it's interesting, especially during this COVID-19 time. And it's been a pleasure to learn more about Schedulo.
And the pleasure is mutual, and really enjoyed talking with you, Christine. And it is such an interesting time and an important time, I think, for everyone to think about how we're going to pull through this together. But certainly wherever we can help, we'd love to.
That's right. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, our content writer, Casper Mossman, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.